Welcome to Equilibrium Echoes, the podcast where we delve into the transformative power of your inner world on your relationships. I'm your host, Alyssa Decker. Join me as we unlock the secrets of emotional equilibrium and dig deep into the tools and insights needed to foster healthier, more fulfilling relationships in ways that feel safe and authentic. Good morning. Welcome to episode one of Equilibrium Echoes. I'm your host, Alyssa Decker. It is lovely to meet you. So because this is our first episode, I want to just start by sharing just a little bit of my story and why we're here. Why did I start Equilibrium Echoes? Why am I so excited to bring you this podcast? Because let me tell you, I do not need another thing in my life to do. And I'm sure in reality, you do not need another podcast to listen to either. There are a million options out there. So why this one? Well, it's because in this podcast, I am going to share with you some things that I have learned that I have found extremely valuable in my own life. And yet I do not hear them being talked about enough. And that is how to manage and control your inner world, your thoughts, your emotions, your visualizations, all the things that happen inside your head that no one else is privy to. And even more importantly, how those things in your inner world affect your outer world. So listen, I spent 19 years in a very difficult marriage. And one of the things that finally helped in this really challenging situation was learning how to manage my inner world, because it changed for me everything. It didn't necessarily change the circumstances, although some circumstances were very much improved when I mastered some of these techniques, but it really significantly changed how I felt about my circumstances, how I showed up in my circumstances, how I showed up, not just in that relationship, but in all of the relationships in my life, for friends, for my children, for my work relationships. When I started to understand the power of perspective, the power of self-talk, the power of managing everything that happens above my shoulders in my body, it literally changed so much for me. And that is why I started Equilibrium Echoes. Now, we're going to have some great guests on. I'm excited to do some interviews. I have a great lineup coming to you this season. But I'm also going to do a few episodes here and there where I just share with you what my experience has been and what is going on in my inner world and how I've managed that and how it's changed my life. So first of all, my name is Alyssa Decker. I live in Texas. I am a single mom of 5 kids. I have 2 businesses, a very full life, and somehow I find time to do most of the things that need to be done, except for laundry. Laundry can always be left for another day, let me just tell you. So like I said, I was married for 19 years. Was a very challenging relationship. I am now divorced and really enjoying the many aspects of the single life. Now, here's the thing I want you to know. You probably already know this, but let me just make sure, because I think it needs to be said up front. When you are in a relationship, and when I say relationships, I am referring to partnerships, to marriages, to significant others, but also to family, parents, siblings, friends, coworkers, even your boss, all of the people that are in our lives on a regular basis, okay? When you are in a relationship and with someone who carries a significant amount of emotional trauma, that trauma is going to lead to more trauma, particularly if the other person is unaware that their lives are being managed, that their emotional space is being controlled by trauma. Now, no judgment here. I have absolutely been there, done that. And there are a million resources out there for trauma healing, for understanding trauma. I will put some of my favorites in the podcast notes. If you're in a place where you feel like there are things inside of you that need to be healed, go check out those resources. But what I want to talk about here today is when you are the person on the receiving end of someone else's trauma or someone else's poor relationship skills or someone else's inability to fully participate in a healthy way in your relationship. And yet, you cannot or choose not to leave that relationship at this time. Now, sometimes the solution is to leave. If you are in an abusive relationship, you may need to leave. If you are in a relationship that is harmful to you, you may need to leave. More on that in another episode. We're going to talk in the next episode about how to know the difference between just a difficult, painful relationship and a damaging and harmful one. So stay tuned for that. But many times we're in these high conflict, challenging relationships, and the solution really is not to leave. Or even if we leave, like in the case of a spouse where we share children, those relationships don't disappear completely from our lives. Maybe you have a boss that's hard to work with, or a partner you share kids with, or a parent you still really want to be part of your life, but you desperately need something to change in that relationship because it's hard and it's painful and it sucks the life out of you. There are things that you can do to change all of that without the other person's cooperation. Now, let's get into this. So how do you do that, Alyssa? How do you do that? Right? That seems a little easier said than done. Yes, yes, it does. That's what I thought the first time some of these concepts were presented to me, but now I've proven them. So let's talk about it. Okay, first of all, it starts with mindset work and inner healing. Now, these are two phrases that are tossed around all the time and that I admittedly did not fully understand until the last several years because I finally got desperate enough to get some help. Okay, I finally got to a point where I was like, something has to give here. And I'm willing to be wrong. I'm willing for it to suck big time and be painful. And I'll do whatever it takes to get to a place where I feel better inside of me, inside my head, because I am miserable, right? Maybe you've been there in a relationship. You just would love to be done with it or avoid it, but you just can't for whatever reason. So through therapy books and honest conversation with friends and trial and error, to be perfectly honest, I finally learned how to change what was going on inside my head. I learned how to change the narrative because when I changed the narrative in my head, that began to change my emotions. And then that began to change my actions. And then that began to change my circumstances. Now, notice that I did not say I changed my mindset and my life changed. I didn't say I thought a different thought and my circumstances changed. This is a process. Some of my actual circumstances did not change, but the way I felt about those circumstances absolutely did. And that is where my power lies. We cannot change the other person. Many, many times, we have no control over the circumstances we find ourselves in, but we have full, absolute control over what happens in our inner world. So let me tell you a little bit about why I ended up getting in a place where I was desperate enough that I was going to do this work, no matter how painful it was, right? I was ready to do whatever it took. I was in like I said, in my marriage for 19 years. And in this marriage, there was a cycle that began to repeat itself every 2 to 3 months. And it started very early on in our marriage. So in 19 years, I made it through this cycle quite a few times. Now, and I think many of you might be able to identify with this because something similar has happened in one of your relationships. So here's how it would work things would be going pretty well for a while. We'd be getting along. We would be relatively happy. Things would be kind of peaceful in our house. And then as time went on, I began to notice his frustration level would begin to escalate. He'd start getting a little snippy or a little less patient. He would get more demanding. He would be less tolerant of the little quirky things that make up every relationship. And it would escalate over the course of a few weeks until he would get more and more angry. I wouldn't be able to live up to his expectations no matter what I did. I would start to feel like I was walking on eggshells. And then the day would come in every cycle where he would say the dreaded words, "We need to talk." Then he would spend about an hour telling me how I didn't live up to his expectations and how he was frustrated. He was disappointed that I just couldn't seem to manage to do the very simple things that he needed most from me. He would ask me if I thought something was wrong with him because he needed so much. Like, he always wanted a solution from me as to why I couldn't seem to live up to what he considered to be his very simple and basic expectations in the relationship. So he would cry. I would cry, not for the same reasons he was crying, but I would cry. And he would feel better because he felt like I got the message. And then we would move on to some bedroom activities and he'd be happy for a few days. He would feel emotionally connected to me. He would be tender and sweet and loving. And I was left feeling like I had just been emotionally vomited on. And then my body had been taken advantage of. And now he's happy, and I am left feeling like my only option in this relationship is to try harder because clearly there is something wrong with me because I'm unable to meet his very basic expectations, right? Now, there is a whole lot of things going on in this cycle. If you have any knowledge of psychology or therapy or CBT, you are probably identifying a million red flags. And yes, there are a million red flags. But what I want to point out to you is that in this scenario, okay, and by the way, if you find yourself in a scenario like this, go talk to someone, okay? Go talk to someone, find a therapist, find a trauma counselor, find a trusted professional who can help you understand the dynamics of what is really going on in your relationship. But what I want to focus on here is what was happening in my mind. Okay. For me, going through this cycle over and over and over again for years, it seemed like there was nothing I could do to break the cycle. And every time it got worse because I got less patient. I got less tolerant. I got more hurt, more frustrated, more angry because I kept trying harder and nothing was ever enough for him. And so it became more and more painful every time we would go through the cycle because he was reminding me over and over again that despite my best efforts, despite what I had changed, despite how I had bent over backwards in the last 3 months to try to make him happy, nothing I ever did was enough. Nothing was going to be enough. And he continued to escalate in the way that he talked to me about that. And he would start to tell me, he would start to compare me to other people in his life. He started to tell me that when I didn't meet his needs, he had difficulty coping with his life. A lot of language where he was putting the responsibility for the relationship squarely on me. And more than that, he was putting the responsibility for the emotional connection and well-being of our relationship squarely on me. Okay. So here's the question. What do we do when we get trapped in these relationship cycles, especially when, for one reason or another, we are unwilling to just walk away, right? A lot of times, if you read books about relationships or about conflict management, the advice is, look, just walk away, right? Just leave. If you're trapped in an unhealthy dynamic, just get out. And like I said, sometimes you may need to do that, but many times we find ourselves in these dynamics in relationships that we really don't want to leave, or we're really not ready to leave yet. So what do we do? Okay, so here we go. This is the reason I created this podcast, Equilibrium Echoes. This is why we are here. And the truth is that you can change so much about these cycles and relationships all by yourself. And like I said, I did not figure this out overnight. I didn't even figure it out in the first decade of my relationship. So if you're clueless about the solution or how to fix it, I'm 100% with you and there's no judgment here. But I'm going to share with you some things I've learned over the past few years. And some of this I've learned in therapy, some of it in a support group, some from my own study or my own trial and error. And honestly, I cannot take credit for most of what I'm about to share with you. And again, check the podcast notes when we are done to find some of the resources that have helped me the most. Okay, so lesson number one, mindset shift number one. And if you're listening to me and you happen to be female, you're probably going to identify with this even more. I know men can do this too, but it seems like the ladies that I have talked to in particular, we struggle with this. So here's the mindset shift. I am only responsible for my feelings, my actions, my words, not the other person's. Let me say that again. I am only responsible for my feelings, actions, and words. I am not responsible for the other person. Okay. Someone else's feelings and reactions, in my case, my husband's feelings and reactions are their own, and they have the right to feel all of their emotions, to choose all of their actions, and to experience the consequences of those actions, whether they're good or bad. So many times in my relationship, I would be in this constant state of analysis. How can I say this in a way that's not going to result in anger? How can I phrase this in a way that will be well received? How can I change my actions so that I'll get a good reaction from my husband? How can I make sure that dinner is perfect and laundry is done and the kids aren't yelling so that we can have peace in our home? I was taking responsibility and putting it on myself to manage my husband's feelings and reactions. And I know this sounds simple. Some of you are probably sitting there listening to me going, well, duh, but I'm telling you, sometimes we do this. We don't even realize what we're doing. If you had told me 5 years ago, Alyssa, you got to stop managing his feelings and his reactions. Those are his business, not yours. I would have said to you two things. I would have said to you, well, we're married, so I have a responsibility to prioritize him. Okay, that's true, but that does not mean that I'm responsible for managing his emotions. And then the other thing I would have said to you is, but it's much more peaceful for me and for my children if I manage him. But what I was failing to realize is I was really undermining my own peace by putting so much thought and energy and effort into what he was thinking or feeling. Because at the end of the day, I had no control over it. I could spend all day trying to figure out the best way to talk to him about something, or making sure his socks were clean, or making sure his favorite cup was washed. And it still didn't keep this cycle from repeating. It still didn't keep his temper from erupting. The real key to bringing peace into my home was for me to be at peace with myself and let him manage his stuff. Okay. Now, this is not easy. If you are stuck in this cycle of constantly trying to manage someone else's reaction, and you feel like what you are doing is keeping you or your kids or someone else you care about safe, it is very, very hard to break out of this cycle. So please do not think that I'm giving you a solution or telling you that you're somehow doing something wrong if you don't fix this in a matter of minutes. That is not what I am saying. This is a mindset shift, and it will take time to reorient and retrain your brain and form new neural pathways. There's all kinds of science behind that, but just know that it takes time and it's not easy, but you can do it. And once you do that and you release that other person to have their own human experience, to have their own adult experience, you're going to find that that freeze is so freeing inside of you. So when we're stuck in these cycles, what we need to do most is just take that step back and start to detach from the other person's emotions or experiences. We need to realize that what the other person is feeling or doing or saying is their human experience and very often not about us at all. So one of the things that my counselor told me that was so helpful, kind of as a way to visualize this when you're in the moment and start retraining your brain, she gave me this illustration about the Tasmanian devil from Looney Tunes. Who remembers the Looney Tunes cartoons of the 80s and 90s? And the Tasmanian devil, he would get so worked up. He'd get so upset and frustrated. He'd start whirling himself around and form this little tornado, right? He would get so emotionally wrapped up in his little whatever that he would spin like a tornado. And she said, Alyssa, when your husband or anyone else in your life gets all worked up in their own emotion, they get all stirred up, they're having a temper tantrum, or they're having a meltdown, or they are emotionally vomiting all over the people around them, think to yourself, oh, look, there he is doing his little Tasmanian devil tornado. And she said, remember, it is not your job to stop the tornado. It is not your job to fix the tornado or the problem that caused the tornado. Your job is to step back far enough that you don't get sucked in. She said, don't step back and then try to stick your hand in the hurricane to see if you can stop it, or in the tornado to see if you can stop it. Step back and stay back until it subsides. And then you can re-engage with that relationship. That has helped me so much, so much when I am in a relationship. And I have applied this to so many relationships, you guys. Any relationship where I'm in a situation and the other person is becoming emotionally dysregulated and they are trying to suck me in to their dysregulation, I picture this in my head and I mentally and emotionally take a step back and I say, oh, look, they're having a Tasmanian devil moment. They're having a Taz moment. This is not about me. I'm going to take a step back and I am just going to wait patiently over here out of the way until they are done having this experience. And then I can continue to engage with them. Okay, so here's another strategy, another mindset shift that was huge for me when I finally realized and understood this. And this comes from Natalie Hoffman, flyingfreenow.com. And she says that And she, I think, gets this information from other sources, but this is where I heard it. She teaches in her program that feelings come from thoughts. Now, this was completely new to me because honestly, even as a 40-year-old woman, I didn't understand that there was something really going on behind my feelings. When I was angry or frustrated, I tended to think to myself, this person or this circumstance is making me angry. And I knew that I had a choice to be angry or not to be angry, but I didn't understand that underneath that emotion was a thought. So let's think about it this way. Let's say someone comes up to you at your workplace and says, gosh, you are such an idiot. Okay. We, most of us, are going to have a very immediate, very emotional reaction to that scenario, right? We're going to think, oh, I can't believe they just said that to me. And we might get angry. We might get anxious. We might go in the bathroom and cry, right? We can have a variety of reactions, but in general, we're going to feel one underlying emotion. And what is that? Shame. Why are we feeling shame because someone at work just called us an idiot? It's because underneath that shame is a thought. And that thought might be, there must be something wrong with me. Maybe I really am an idiot. Goodness, that was really stupid. Why did I do that? Probably on some level, we're feeling like we deserved to be told that we were an idiot. And on some level, we're feeling like maybe we are an idiot because our thought aligns on some level with what they said, and that causes shame in our bodies. So what's really happening there? Our brain is giving credence to what that person said to us. And the result is a shame emotion or an anger emotion or a sadness emotion, something negative happening in our inner world, right? So what would happen instead if someone comes up to you at work and says, gosh, you're such an idiot. I just can't believe you did that. What would happen instead in your inner world, in your head, if your thought was, huh, it's really fascinating that they believe that, especially since there's no evidence of that. Because I do some things wrong, but goodness, I'm really kind of a smart person. That would create a completely different reaction, a completely different feeling in your body, wouldn't it? Of course it would. So one of the ways that we have to start retraining our brains to manage our inner world is to start acknowledging and recognizing the thoughts that are underneath the feelings that we're experiencing. We cannot change our feelings, especially not in the moment. What we can do is retrain our brains to have a different thought because that will create a different feeling. Okay, so here's another example. Let's say that someone came up to you and said, just completely out of the blue, maybe you're sitting and eating at a restaurant and the waitress comes up to you and she says, good grief, you look silly with that red clown nose on. But you're not wearing a red clown nose. So what are you going to think in that moment, right? You're probably not going to think, oh, I look like an idiot for wearing this red clown nose in a restaurant, right? You're going to think to yourself, what is she smoking to think that I'm wearing a red clown nose? See the difference? If you ascribed value to what she was saying, if you gave credence to her statement that you were wearing a red clown nose, you might go, am I wearing a red clown nose? Right? But you're not going to feel shame for wearing a red clown nose because you know you're not, wearing a red clown nose. Now, if you don't assign any credence to what she's saying, you're going to think, what is she smoking, right? But neither of those scenarios is going to bring about shame or anger inside of you because your thought doesn't align with what she said. Your brain is not agreeing on any level with what that waitress just said to you. So part of this inner work then is learning how to create different thoughts, to choose different thoughts in our brains so that those thoughts create different feelings, so that we relate differently to our circumstances. Okay, we're going to talk about that much, much deeper in a future episode, so stay tuned for that. Now, it has been pointed out to me as I have interviewed recently on some different podcasts that oftentimes when we are in these high conflict situations, say the situation at work where our coworker comes up and tells us that we are such an idiot, right? It feels very disempowering at times to not engage and argue our competence or argue our whatever to defend ourselves in that situation. But here's what I would say to you. This is another mindset shift that you can create in your brain that will enable you to take back your power in these situations. Think of it like this. Imagine that you are in a sandbox with another kid and you are happily playing away with this other kid, being your coworker and the workplace being the sandbox. Okay, go with me here. Okay. This is another analogy from Natalie Hoffman. And suddenly, that other kid, without any provocation from you, begins to throw sand. Now, you have a couple of choices in that moment, right? You can throw sand back. You can sit down and cry. You can start yelling and screaming at the other kid to stop throwing sand, or you can pick up your toys and you can leave the sandbox. Now, what you got to understand here is that that other kid who started throwing sand is doing it for any number of reasons. They might be doing it because they are attempting to feel powerful. They might be throwing sand because they just want to fight because they're annoyed and mad and angry about other things. They might be doing it to hurt you in order to feel better about themselves. But there is no positive motivation there, right? They want something from you that's going to make them feel better, but they're going about it in an unhealthy way. So in that situation, if you choose any of those options, except for picking up your toys and leaving the sandbox, you have just engaged with them and given them what they wanted. So when you pick up your toys and you leave the sandbox, what you are saying is, I am not going to engage with you in this unhealthy way. And perhaps when you are ready to engage in a healthy way, I will return and play with you again in the sandbox. So in an office situation, your coworker has just called you an idiot. It's so tempting to want to fight back, right? The reaction that we often have is to feel like if we walk away, we're showing weakness, right? We are submitting to the other person's assessment of us. But in reality, it's exactly the opposite. When you walk away and you refuse to engage and you refuse to participate on their level, what you're really saying is, I am taking my toys and I am leaving the sandbox because I am not going to give you what you want in this situation. Not going to give you a reaction from me. I'm not going to give you a fight. I am not going to allow you to take away my power and autonomy to make you feel better, to make yourself feel better. So when we can think of it like this, right, it completely changes how we feel and therefore what emotions we experience, what we're thinking about the situation. So when we can look at a situation like this, it changes our thought, which changes our feeling, which allows us to reclaim our power and our autonomy in that situation. Okay. So what would it look like? Let's take a step back here for a minute and look at the big picture and ask ourselves, what would it look like if we just were able to take a step back from these really highly charged, emotionally difficult relationships and stop feeling responsible for them and stop feeling like we had a responsibility to engage with the other person's tornado, and we just distanced ourselves enough to stay out of the tornado and manage our inner world well. It changes the cycle completely. So remember the cycle that I was describing to you that happened in my marriage, where my husband would escalate and escalate and escalate in his frustration and in his reactions and in his anger. And then we would have an hour-long conversation, which was really not a conversation. It was a lecture where he would remind me of all the ways that I am failing him. And then we would have sex and everything would be better for him. And then we would repeat the cycle. In the last 2 or 3 years of our marriage, I started to understand some of these principles that I've been talking about today. And I started to approach this cycle differently because I started to see it for what it was. And so there were three different approaches that I took in this cycle to handle it in a better, more healthy way for myself. And also to start to prove or validate for myself that there was not a way for me to fix this relationship, right? And very often I will tell you, there's not really often a way that you by yourself can fix a relationship. All you can do is change what's happening inside of you. But you can create an environment in the relationship where you have peace, where you have joy, where you have emotional stability, whether or not the other person does. And that is where your power lies when it comes to fixing a relationship. Okay. So when we were in this cycle in our relationship, after about 15 years, I started to figure this out and I stopped just sitting and listening and I started taking some different courses of action when this would happen. So here's the first way. The first thing I started to do was to really push him to get specific. So when he would start to tell me over and over again that I wasn't living up to his expectations, that I wasn't meeting his needs, I started to ask very specific questions. What expectations? I'm not living up to your expectations. Okay, what expectations? Are your socks not clean? Am I not greeting you at the door when you come in? Am I not answering your phone calls? Like, what specific expectations are you looking for me to meet that I'm not meeting? And here's what would happen. Very, very often, he could not give me specifics. And when he would try to give me specifics, more often than not, what he would say was something that I was, in fact, already doing. And I would just calmly point out, you know, babe, I actually have been doing that. And here's an example, and here's an example, and here's an example. And he would get very frustrated, but I don't feel like you're meeting my needs. And I would say, okay, well, what needs? Just my needs. Like, you need to know, you're my wife. You should know how to make me feel loved. And then I could look at him and say, you know, it's not my job in this relationship to meet unnamed expectations. So when you have specifics, come back and talk to me. And in doing that, I was leaving the door open for future dialogue, but also just letting him know I cannot and will not spend my life chasing after some elusive measure of what it looks like to you for me to be a good wife. It's a boundary that I put in place. Okay. Third way that you can handle these kind of situations is internal. So maybe you're not at a point in your relationship where you feel confident in speaking up. Trust me, this was me the majority of the time. Okay. I don't want to give you the wrong impression here. I, for the majority of the time, used this third scenario. Sometimes I would get brave and I would get bold and I would speak up. And if I was in this relationship again, I would be there now because of the healing work that I've done. But the reality is where I was the last few years in our relationship was mostly like this third scenario. So here it is. Husband, when he says, we need to talk, right? I say, oh, okay, right? And I'm panicky on the inside and I feel like throwing up and my mind starts spinning and I'm immediately dysregulated. And so he blabs on for 30 minutes. So in my head, here's what changed in the last few years as I began to learn how to manage my inner world. He would be blabbing on, telling me the same things he told me every month or two or 20 years, almost 20 years. And in my head, I learned that instead of listening and giving credence to what he was saying, remember we talked about just because he says it doesn't mean it's true, and it doesn't mean that I have to assign any value to it. So I would say to myself in my head, there he goes again, having his little Tasmanian devil tornado. There he goes again, telling me that I don't measure up. It's so fascinating that he thinks that, because I think I'm a pretty good wife. And then he would get done lecturing, and mind you, I hadn't said anything, and he'd be like, oh, okay. Thanks for sharing this moment with me. I feel better. Let's have sex. And I would think to myself, again, internal management here, right? I would say, I guess that what he needed to feel better was to lecture me. That is some really useful information to know that he didn't really want my feedback at all. He didn't really want or need my participation in this conversation at all. He probably could have talked to the shower curtain in the shower and felt similarly, right? All he really wanted was to vent, wasn't about me. So all three of these ways of handling the situation, of handling the cycle, changed what was happening in my inner world. All three of these ways of handling this cycle brought so much more peace to me, so much more safety for me, because I started standing up for myself. Even if it was only in my mind, even if it was only in the way that I thought about the conversation, even if it was only in the way that I chose to not assign value to what he was saying, or I chose not to believe that what he thought about me was more important than what I thought about me. I decided to have my own back. Let me say that again. I decided to have my own back. Listen, when God created us, he created us first and foremost with one responsibility, and that is to take care of and manage ourselves. We are not responsible for anyone's salvation. We are not responsible for anyone else's relationship with God. We are not responsible for anyone else's emotional health. We are responsible for ourselves, for our words, for our thoughts, for our actions, for our emotions, for everything that happens in our internal world and everything that comes out of us. But the same is true for the other person in your life. Okay? So very often in these emotionally difficult relationships, the answer really lies in changing what is happening inside of us, changing our thoughts, our feelings, our reactions can change very often the dynamics of these relationships. Sometimes it won't change the relationship at all, but we will feel so much better. And sometimes when we change what happens inside of us, it does begin to change the relationship. But whether it does or doesn't, your goal needs to be to feel better inside your own head, in your own skin, to know who you are, to feel safe, to feel confident, to have your own back. And when you can do that, you can withstand all of the tornadoes happening around you because you are safe and confident within yourself. And I'm telling you, it just changes everything. We cannot change the other person. The goal in a relationship is never to change the other person. We cannot do that no matter how hard we try. Can I get an amen? Because someone here has been trying to change someone else in a relationship for years. Maybe we've all done that, right? I certainly did that. And it does not work. The real goal is to create a safe inner space for ourselves where we have our own backs, where we choose our thoughts, where we create safety and peace for ourselves in our inner world. And then we can watch the ripples or the echoes of that begin to affect the world around us. Okay, so as this podcast goes on, we are going to dig deeper into this inner world work. We are going to talk to some fantastic guests about how their inner work changed their lives. We're going to learn how our nervous system works. This is fascinating, guys. And when I began to understand how my nervous system worked, it released me from so much guilt about the way that I was responding to situations that felt threatening to me. So I can't wait to share that with you. We're also going to practice together learning how to leverage our inner world and change our relationships for the better. So thank you for hanging with me during this very long monologue. I hope you found something really useful here, and I will see you soon in episode 2.